You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, one and all, to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, Saturday, August 30th, coming to you from our flagship AM radio station in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and select markets across America, and simulcasting around the world tonight on the internet at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We've got a treat for you, ladies and gentlemen, as I announce our incomparable featured guest of the evening, a man who has... we've been fortunate enough to come to know as not only a good friend, but a mainstay in terms of his willingness to appear on our broadcast over the course of the last 10 years very consistently. It is the one and only Jared Taylor, editor of American Renaissance and author of numerous books, including Paved with Good Intentions, and White Identity, Racial Consciousness for the 21st Century. Jared, welcome back to the broadcast.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to join you, James.
Winston Smith will also be helping me conduct this interview, but let's dive right into it. Of course, as I believe I let it be known to you, we spent 3 hours last week trying to digest Ferguson. And I think in spending the 3 hours, we still failed to even scratch the tip of the iceberg in terms of just the scope of this whole incident. We've had a few days now to exhale, as it appears as though at least some of the rioting has subsided. But you wrote an epic piece at Amren on this topic. What would be your general overview, Jared, of the entire situation, if I had to ask you that?
I think, to sum it up, it would be that this is an incident that shows just how deeply Americans are divided by race, and also just how difficult it is to get blacks in large numbers to take seriously the kind of legal procedures that we have worked for centuries to establish in the West. No one really yet knows outside of the participants in this event what happened, and yet blacks, 57% of them, are convinced that the officer who shot Michael Brown is guilty of murder. Now, only 17% of whites believe that. But the reason we have all of these procedures to investigate, grand jury, and if a grand jury makes an indictment, we have a trial, all of those procedures have been established over really millennia of effort to try to figure out a fair way to decide situations like this. Well, blacks aren't interested. Blacks don't care. They hear the first view out of some black guy's mouth that this guy was shot running away in the back, and they are convinced the officer is guilty of murder. It just says to me that you cannot expect blacks to live in the same society and play by the same rules as whites.
Jared, I was breaking down this piece that I mentioned a moment ago on American Renaissance, and it's entitled, by the way, folks, To Understand Ferguson's Roots, Look to Africa. We reposted it at our website, and of course the original content can be found at American Renaissance. And I was lifting passages from that and inserting it into our commentary last week. But I also hearkened back to an eternally true statement. It's a single sentence, but it really packs a punch, and I got it from you. And that is, the history of race relations can be summed up in one word, and that word is, of course, conflict. And we see that here, and regardless of what the facts may be, and obviously the autopsy has come back and proven the facts that this man was indeed shot in the front, not in the back, but none of that matters. They don't seem to care. They've got their narrative, and they're sticking to it, no matter what the facts say. And when you're talking about the aspects of this case, any one of which we could spend an hour talking about, the media's presentation of this whole ordeal, the riots and the behavior of the denizens there in Ferguson and some of the agitators that have come in from out of town to engage in the looting and pillaging, the legal ramifications, how our legal system now apparently bows to political correctness, the way Eric Holder has inserted race into this. The facts of the case themselves and the main characters, of course, the officer with the sterling record versus this guy who was, and obviously, a thug. Now, did he deserve to die for being a thug? No, but did he deserve to die if he did, in fact, assault this officer and the officer felt as though his life was in danger? Well, that's what the investigations, hopefully, will determine for us. But again, you could sink your teeth into any one of those aspects, Jared. To you, which is the most salacious?
I think what is in some ways the most shocking is that Eric Holder, who is the number one law enforcement officer of the United States of America, has obviously taken a position based on race and not on law. To me, that's absolutely shameful. He has sent 40 FBI agents to Ferguson. 40! As if they didn't have other important things to be doing. 40 FBI agents who are trying to find out whether or not this officer might be a racist or might have ever said, told an off-color joke. 40 FBI officers. This to me, this just goes to show you how committed he is to salvaging this whites are racist narrative. That's the only thing he thinks in terms of. Why can't he let the county procedure, the state procedure, and also the police department's internal procedure figure out what happened? If this officer has shot a man who did not deserve to be shot, he is very likely to be disciplined, he will be indicted, and he will go before a judge and jury. But for Eric Holder to come flying in before anybody has made the first possible baby step in the direction of what really happened, to me, just goes to show you how hopelessly biased he is.
Well, I think that what you see here are all of the worst elements of the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman debacle.
Yep.
Injected with steroids or having had fertilizer thrown on top of them, because this is really kind of a mutated caricature of that situation. And Buchanan said something that I thought was very much on the mark. He said that Eric Holder has an almost Sharpton-like obsession with race. And
that's
of course,
right.
You know, here he is, the Attorney General of the United States, coming in to this powder keg and throwing a little more napalm on it, saying he comes not only as the Attorney General, but as a black man. I mean, what's that supposed to mean? I thought race, or rather justice, was supposed to be colorblind. Apparently not anymore.
No, he's quite explicit about it. In fact, one of the commentators, Michael Eric Dyson, I'm sure you're aware of him.
Yes.
Just an outspoken racial black advocate and black supremacist. He says, unlike President Obama, and I think he's right, Eric Holder is a straight up and down race man. Those are Eric Dyson's words. In other words, he puts race front, left, and center. Right. That's all he's thinking in terms of.
Which is, of course, in their mind, an attribute when it comes to their people. But if we even suggest that we should have the right to survive or identify with our ancestors, then, of course, it's just the living embodiment of evil. And, of course, that double standard has been talked about for years on this show, and it's nothing new.
Yeah.
It's not a new concept.
Yeah.
You see there... Well, we're coming up to a break, Jared. I just want to add this, and then I'll turn it back over to you. And I know Winston's going to get in on this interview in the next segment with a couple of questions. But when you see the governor of a state say that this man, this officer, should be vigorously prosecuted, not investigated, but prosecuted, I think you know what you're playing with. We're going to take a break and be back with Jared right after this.
Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like the green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2's skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 Moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
A backpack is more than just a bag. It's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Whoa! This is big!
Not just big, it's the Freeze Dry Guys Giant Factory Authorized Sale. This month, save 30 to 45% off on number 10 cans of high-quality Mountain House freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy. Factory fresh stock just arrived, so now's the time to stock up with the finest, best-tasting, longest-proven shelf-life foods in the industry at giant savings of 30 to 45% off. But hurry, supplies are limited to only the stock we have on hand. Call 866-404-3666. Free shipping to the lower 48 states. Click freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com. Hurry, the Giant Factory authorized Mountain House sale is going on now, only from the Freeze Dry Guy. The finest freeze-dried and dehydrated foods available anywhere for long-term storage.
Get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Ladies and gentlemen, our featured guest this evening is Jared Taylor, truly a titan for our people. His library of published works include Paved with Good Intentions, The Failure of Race Relations in Contemporary America. You know, that book was written 20 years ago. I think what we see here in Ferguson now is another exhibit in the case to prove that race relations in contemporary America have failed, and there's a greater fissure now than there ever was during the so-called bad days of segregation. Jared's most recent book is the title White Identity, Racial Consciousness for the 21st Century. We've pushed that book and promoted it on this broadcast. Jared, I want to turn the interview over to Winston Smith for a moment, but you were about to say something before the break. Before Winston gets a question in, I wanted to allow you to finish your thought.
Yes, I wanted to quote Michael Levin, a professor of City University in New York, and I mentioned this in the piece that you referred to earlier. He said that white people assume that blacks operate according to the same rules and motivations of whites, and therefore, when blacks get furious about something, they see blacks rioting in Ferguson or raging about racism, they feel there must be something legitimate there. But as Michael Levin points out, often there is nothing legitimate there. It's just pure resentment, even outright hatred of whites. But white people say to themselves, gosh, if they're that angry, there must be some real grievance, something that we've done wrong. And until whites realize that, no, they do not, blacks do not operate by the same system of motives on a large scale as we do, they do not think in the same terms of reciprocal fairness, until they make that realization, they're going to be fooled over and over and over again by these outbursts of black rage that are really expressions of resentment and hatred rather than any attempt to correct an injustice.
Jared, you worded that so eloquently, and that's, of course, needless to say, exactly right. Like a petulant child. If a petulant child throws a big enough fit, does that mean that they are right? Well, I don't think
exactly.
So. Winston, take it away, Winston.
Hello, Jared. I'm pleased to talk with you tonight, sir. How are you?
Yes, sir. Oh, I'm very well. It's a pleasure to be on the program.
By the way, my transcriptionist, Stephanie, says she appreciates the tempo of your speech. You speak in a very measured way, and it's easy for her to type what you're saying. So thank you for considering Stephanie in your speech there, sir.
We all take lessons when it comes to diction and on-air voices from James Edwards.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
With all the forensic evidence and most of the most reliable witness testimony points to Michael Brown assaulting Officer Darren Wilson, and yet the African and America community in Ferguson, Moe, and all across the country continues to scream his innocence. As the evidence against Brown becomes ever more damning, the praise for him becomes ever more ridiculous, with some people going so far as to compare him to none other than Jesus Christ. Do you think that the African and American community truly believes in his innocence, even in the face of the mounting evidence? Or could it be that, like the Trayvon Martin fiasco, they're just so invested in the lie that they really have no option but to continue therein and expand and accessorize it?
I think they do genuinely believe that he was gunned down in cold blood. I think most blacks genuinely believe that Trayvon Martin was followed by this white Hispanic who then shot him down in cold blood. Once they have heard a story at the outset that is different, and one that depicts white people, or in Zimmerman's case, Hispanic, acting in a racist way, their minds just fasten onto that, and they refuse to let go. I think this whole Ferguson business flared up because of press irresponsibility that borders on the criminal. I think that if they had not reported this first guy who was with Brown when he was shot, claiming that he was running away and shot in the back, if they had taken a little bit of time to figure out what is more likely to have happened, none of this violence, none of this rioting, none of this uproar would have happened at all. And as I wrote in my piece that James was mentioning earlier, I think there's not one sworn police officer in the United States who is in cold blood going to shoot a guy 20 or 30 feet away with his arms in the air, with his back to you, saying, "I'm unarmed." And yet, blacks are so full of resentment and hatred against whites that you get some thug young black guy saying, "Yes, that's what happened, and I saw it." And they all run off and believe it, and it makes no difference what facts come out in the end. That's what they will always continue to believe.
Well, Jared, you're right.
If they truly believe in his innocence, I'm trying to get to the psychology of how looting and rioting makes it right. If they're thinking that he was indeed shot in cold blood, that implies some sort of reasoning going on, but I cannot fathom how the reasoning goes from one of our people is dead, let's make it right by destroying the town.
Well, those are two different things. Remember, blacks, when you get a large number of young blacks together in one place, you can expect that kind of misbehavior, whether it's looting or violence. Blacks can go pouring into the street to celebrate the victory in a basketball game. They can go pouring into the street just because they got some message on some text message saying, "Let's all gather at the center of town." They can all be in the street because there's been a fireworks display. But once you get that number of blacks all together, and that is when their thinking will turn to things like looting, like robbing. And I think that it has to do simply with getting a large number of blacks in one place, not with any kind of logical rationalization in terms of, okay, this evil was done to Michael Brown, and therefore we do X. No, it had nothing to do with that. It just happened. It had to do with the nature of blacks when you get a lot of them in one place at the same time.
And Jared, I'll say this: you pointed to what I believe should Well, you don't want to criminalize speech, no matter how ignorant it is. But, I mean, certainly what the media has done here is contemptible, to say the least.
Yes.
In manufacturing a story here in a narrative, this was a tragic, I guess, situation. You never want to see a loss of life. But this was not a national news story. I mean, it's certainly not one that should have gotten wall-to-wall coverage on all of the networks for weeks on end, nor was the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman story a national story by any stretch of the imagination. But it has become one, come hell or high water.
Well, you see, this happens over and over. Some completely partial account that makes white people look bad becomes national news. It happened in the Trayvon Martin case, happened in the alleged rape of this stripper by the Duke lacrosse team. It happened in the case of the Jenna Six. Of course, you can go all the way back to Tawana Brawley. Over and over and over, there's some allegation of white misbehavior. The press runs wild. Blacks run wild. But I think that white people are slowly beginning to wake up. I was looking at a Rasmussen poll the other day, according to which a majority of Americans, 53%, view it unfavorably. There's no racial breakdown there either. I bet if you asked white people what they think of the Justice Department, and this had to do with Eric Holder sticking his nose into the Ferguson business, I would bet 60, 70% of whites disapprove of that. I think that this has happened so many times, you can cry wolf only so often, and people are beginning to get fed up.
Well, that very well may be the case, and I think it's trending towards that as well. We only have seconds remaining in our interview with you, Jared, and I wish it could last all night. But I want to ask you this. Well, first of all, I want to tell people to be sure to check out your work and support your work at amren.com. That's A-M-R-E-N for American Renaissance. Amren.com. Buy his books. Support his work. Make it a daily read. I'm going to give you the impossible question, Jared, of asking you to look into your oracle and tell me how this plays out. Charges filed. Does this guy go to jail? You got about 15 seconds.
I think there's not a single grand jury in the United States that's got the courage to refuse to indict this guy. Even if the DA's case against him is the worst that they've ever seen, they will realize that the world will hate them, that they could be riots if they refuse to indict. So he will be indicted. What happens at trial, we'll see. But I predict with complete confidence that he will be indicted. I hope I'm wrong.
Thank you, Jared.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the political cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQonline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQonline.com. Subscribe now.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. I mean, every show is a good show when Jared Taylor is your guest. Winston and I will do the best to carry on in his absence here for the remaining part of this hour. And I know Winston had planned to join us during last week's extravaganza, during which we spent 3 hours focusing on Ferguson. We are going to spend the rest of this hour talking about it, too. And Winston has pulled a couple of stories that he wants to bring to your attention. But before we get to that and the prepared commentary that Winston has, Winston, I want to ask you about this, talking about some stories make news, some don't. We posted this yesterday, originally written by Hunter Wallace of Occidental Descent. Now it appears, he writes, that the death of Michael Brown has provoked the first example, at least that has surfaced, of a retaliatory act of anti-white black mob violence. And this happened in West Point, Mississippi. Ralph Weems, a white man, was savagely beaten. He's in a vegetative state in a hospital now, savagely beaten by a gang of blacks in a Huddle House restaurant parking lot. These blacks were just so whipped into a frenzy about this Michael Brown situation that they attempted to kill, basically, the first white man that they saw. That so happened to be Ralph Weems, who was a former U.S. Marine and Iraq War veteran. He didn't know these men. They didn't know him. They attacked him because he was white. And, of course, because he was white, he was responsible for the death of Michael Brown in their eyes. This story made no news whatsoever outside of the local small community there in Mississippi. And, of course, it goes without saying, Winston, if the races were reversed, West Point, what happened there in West Point, Mississippi, would be a national story. There's no evidence that racial slurs were used in the Michael Brown case or in the Trayvon Martin case, and plenty of evidence that Brown and Martin initiated those violent confrontations, but none of that matters to the mainstream media, which has fixed anti-white narrative whenever it comes, whenever it wants to have a conversation about race. So, you know, again, you have these examples, Brown and Martin, in which the element of race was infused into it unfairly, and then you have examples like this with Ralph Weems, in which the beating and the attempted murder happened entirely because of his race, but because it was black-on-white violence and not imaginary white-on-black violence, it doesn't become a story. Winston?
Just recall the same thing happened in the wake of the Trayvon Martin fiasco. Most notoriously, a pair of feral black thugs decided to take hammers to an elderly white man, and they beat him to a pulp. I don't recall if he died or not, but the only reason they attacked him was because he was white, they were black, they were mad that Trayvon Martin was shot by a Hispanic guy. Only in America can a brown man shoot a black man, and it's the white man's fault. I'll never figure that out.
Well, only in America can a brown man become a white man if he shoots a black man. There's that to consider. But Winston, you plucked a couple of stories that even we didn't get a chance to cover yet, and they sent you into a frenzy, although not a violent one. What did you get?
Well, I got froth at the mouth. Wouldn't you?
Well, tell us what these.
I'm only one article tonight, James. And I would like to tell people that next week when I'm on, I'm going to cover a couple of stories about science, and they've really got me going. I make my living in the scientific community, so this is something that's near and dear to me. So, folks, join in next week, and I'll tell you some things that are going on in the scientific community that are of interest to our people. But tonight, I want to focus on a piece of anti-white excrement that's making its way around Al Gore's internet. It's titled "Dear White Moms," and it was written by a woman called Keisha Beckford. Now, Keisha is a racist of color, and like a lot of racists of color, she's mad that Michael Brown was killed by a white police officer after Brown attacked him, tried to get his gun, and fractured his skull. Keisha thinks that cops shooting feral black thugs who attack them has got to stop. So she makes an appeal to European-American mothers by way of an open letter that begins by listing the similarities between her experiences as an African and American mother and the experiences of European American mothers. Now, it's syrupy, it's sisterly, and it would make any Oprah-fied white woman say, "Aw, ebony and ivory motherhood, so much in common." Now, I'm not going to read this article because I want to spend what time we have on the crux of Keisha's hatred. You can look it up yourself. Again, it's titled "Dear White Moms." But I'll tell you that she describes playgrounds where her African and American son and the son of a generic white woman plays. She writes about birth plans, not getting enough sleep, uncooperative husbands, et cetera, et cetera. And Keisha then asks this generic white woman for a favor, saying she desperately needs her help. So she writes about some growing list of unarmed black males who get plugged by cops and white folks who saw brown skin and figure the brown skin guy certainly did something wrong. You can read in the article where she says young black males have brown skin. I'm not going to discuss that, but it just seemed like a silly grammatical error. Anyhow, she says that all those dead, unarmed young black males are just like her six-year-old son, you know, kind of like Obama and his son Trayvon Martin and all that. Well, she goes on to say that her little black boy is just like the unnamed white woman's little white boy, and both boys are just like Michael Brown, and because all three lads are so much alike, then surely the white woman can relate to Keisha's feelings about Michael Brown. And listen to what she writes. This is Keisha talking, quote, "But this is what Michael Brown brings up for me when I hear that another black mother is grieving for her son, the son she'll never tuck into bed, the son she'll never see grow into a strong, independent man with a family of his own, the son whose manly arms will never grab his mother in a hug and make her feel that now he protects her." I'm not kidding, folks. She actually wrote that about her own son and Michael Brown. She goes on, talking to her generic white friend. "Remember, I'm writing you as a dear friend because I can't believe you're not on my side. After a lifetime together, I won't believe it. It's why I love you. I know you're on my side with all those posts about how I don't have to worry about, quote, my blonde-haired, blue-eyed son being shot by the police," end quote. "I get it. You're not boasting, just stating the sad fact that you understand on the deepest level that your white privilege means your motherhood is different from mine. I love you for this, but it's not enough." Now, did Keisha just tell her beloved white friend that white privilege means white motherhood and African and American motherhood are different? Pardon me, Keisha, and I know it's racist of me to point out your contradictions and illogicities, but you used about four paragraphs telling your dear white friend that you and she are so much alike that surely she must feel the same way as you do about St. Michael Brown. Well, folks, you see where Keisha's coming from. But wait, she has a solution. And here it is in Keisha's own words. "But can you do more? I know you talk to your bigoted relatives." Now, there's the way to get white people to help you out. That's the way for a black sister to get white people to help her out. Tell them to talk to their bigoted relatives. That's not the best way to get people to help you, but by prefacing your request with the assumption that their relatives are bigots. That's pretty offensive. Sort of how offensive Keisha says it is for white people to assume that young male Africans in America have done something wrong just because they're black. Well, Keisha then ticks off a laundry list of items she wants European American women to do, and all the items are the standard paranoia-based white guilt garbage, and I won't read them to you, but I'll say this. Keisha, your six-year-old son is nothing like Michael Brown, and neither is any other six-year-old boy of any other race. Michael Brown was indeed a feral hip-hop gutter thug who was high on marijuana, and he thought his immense size and his gangster reputation made him the cock of the block, so that when a white cop told him and his homie to get off the street and stop blocking traffic, he tried to get the cop's gun. And failing that, he drove his fist in the cop's face with such force that it fractured the cop's skull. All the forensic evidence and reliable witness testimony points to the facts that when the cop got out of his car, Brown decided to charge the cop and try to finish the job. And now Michael Brown is dead. Why did Michael Brown attack that police officer? Well, to answer that question, I'll ask another. If the police officer ordering him off the street had been black, would the result have been the same? Why, no. We all know it wouldn't have been the same. It would not have been the same because Brown would have complied. But because it was a white cop, Brown felt obliged to try to kill him. The racism in this incident was in Michael Brown.
Winston, hold up right there, my friend. We're going to break this commentary apart to an even greater extent right after these words. Stay tuned.
Here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211. Or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center. Where heritage and responsibility instill character. Where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental. Where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
back to get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. One more segment here with my colleague Winston Smith, who has done us a great service tonight in uncovering this diamond in the rough of a story. And Winston brought up a great point in the last segment just before the commercial break as well. If the cop in Ferguson had been black, you would have not heard about this for two reasons. Number one, it would have either never happened at all because Michael Brown would have listened to someone that he identified with, someone he didn't think was an evil racist. Or number two, perhaps it would have gone down the exact same way and he would have attacked the black officer as well. But certainly the media couldn't have used it to foment anti-white resentment if it had been a black officer doing the shooting. And I'm sure he would have been cleared, as he rightly should have, and as I hope Darren Wilson should have, based upon the facts that we've seen so far. And if the facts continue to be presented this way, and if this is what it looks like when the evidence is presented, then we hope justice will be served rather than the legal system again cowing to political correctness, as it did in the Trayvon Martin situation. But getting back to this piece, so here you have Keisha, I believe Winston said her name was, and this story would have not been covered otherwise. And Winston really dug deep and found this. But Keisha represents a mindset that I think is sadly typical. And that is that there is no responsibility by and large. Now, you know, she has this six-year-old son, and I hope and pray that her six-year-old son, her six-year-old black son, grows up to become a contributing member of society and is a net gain to America. And certainly there are blacks that play that role. That should go without saying. But you have such a wildly disproportionate amount of them, based upon their percentage of the population, engaging in this thug culture and committing crimes and being a general nuisance, that certainly any right-thinking police officer is going to look a little more closely at the element of the population that is committing the crimes. Now, that's not to say that this happened at all or that it all came into play in Ferguson, but I'm just saying there's no responsibility. If Keisha wanted to write an article that would help the black community, it's not to excuse people like Michael Brown, but rather force people of his mindset to take responsibility for their actions. Quit blaming your shortcomings in life and your failures and your degenerative behavior on the phantoms and specters of racism. Stand up and be a man and be accountable and live right. You know, work. Speak correctly. You know, do things like normal people do things. You know, autistic in the world don't seem to overshadow this bogus narrative. And Winston, I didn't mean to take off there. I know you have more things to say about this, but I just wanted to chime in because I've enjoyed it.
Well, perfectly all right, James. As you were talking there, I was thinking of something I like to tell people. That's 95% of blacks make the remaining 5% look really bad.
Well, it may not be that skewed, but I get your point.
Yeah. All right, shall I continue?
Yes, go ahead, and then we're going to take a caller in a moment.
Okay. I'll continue on with talking to Keisha here, and I'll say, you know, Keisha, most young black males who are killed by other young black males, and plenty of white people are shot by cops, too. And another thing, Keisha, once you racists of color bring the likes of Al Sharpton into the situation, you lose all credibility. Sharpton's record of achievement is abysmal. There's the Freddy's Fashion Mart massacre, in which several people were killed because Sharpton whipped them up into a frenzy. There's the Tawana Brawley hoax, the Duke Lacrosse rape hoax, the Gina Six, the Trayvon Martin fiasco, and on and on. Look, you should do your people a favor. Tell them to avoid Sharpton like the plague he is. Now, my friends, I want to tell you a little bit about Keisha Beckford. She's very accomplished. She graduated cum laude from Princeton. She's an acclaimed dancer and choreographer. She's taught dance at Yale at the University of North Carolina, and she now teaches at Columbia College in Illinois. She has traveled the world with some of the most prestigious dance companies in the United States. She writes for influential publications and online magazines. And she's rather wealthy. And she's famous. So not only does Keisha Beckford have practically nothing in common with European American mothers, she also has practically nothing in common with 99% of black mothers. I doubt that Keisha Beckford would know what an EBT card looks like or how to go about using one. And I don't disdain her that. On the contrary, I'm happy for her. I want to see everybody of every race prosper and work to perfect their cultures. And Keisha has done well for herself. But in the end, she's just another celebrity racist of color, hating white people like the new Black Panther Party does, and vitally concerned with the genocide of European Americans. James?
Racist of color. Winston, I love that term. I was just text messaging you as you continued the commentary. Bravo, my friend, for bringing that to light. And, you know, that's what we get with Winston. You know, Winston sees things in a different scale than we do. I can take news that comes from establishment sources and break it down, I guess. But Winston finds the stuff that you got to dig a little deeper for. You got to get your hands a little more muddy. And he found us a gem here. This is the kind of stuff that needs to be talked about, because here you have a behind-the-scenes look into the mindset of blacks, and this comes from someone, as Winston mentioned, was very accomplished and still maintains this narrative that she's been held back or done some sort of injustice by this country and this culture, and is still perpetuating the myth that of St. Michael Brown. I can't wait to see what your scientific articles that you're bringing to the table next week are going to entail, Winston. I'm already getting very curious.
Well, I can't wait to bring them. One of them I came upon several months ago, and the other I came upon just this week. I subscribe to a certain magazine. I'm one of probably seven people who do subscribe to this magazine, but I really like it. And there's been a discovery recently, well, maybe 10 years ago, and it sheds some light on America's founding stock. And I'm not talking about the likes of George Washington and Benny Franklin and those great guys. This goes back, way back. And it's a story of how our own government will stand in the way of scientific truth in order to placate minorities.
Well, listen, we're going to find out what the seven of you have been reading about next week, and I look forward to that little teaser. That little teaser has made me look forward to next week, rather. But I want to quickly, before we run out of time with you this hour, and we got a great third hour coming your way as well, ladies and gentlemen, so stay tuned. But we only have a few minutes left with Winston, and I want to work this caller in who's been waiting patiently. Pete, I believe Pete is in Iowa, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, Pete, you're on the political cesspool. What can we do for you, my friend? I am not hearing Pete for some reason, and I don't know why.
Am I on the phone?
Yeah, you got it, Pete. You're ready to go. No, you're on the right line. Take it away.
Okay, sorry. You see things like the whole Michael Brown thing, you know, happen every maybe 2 years. I mean, the list is endless, you know, going back to things like Howard Beach or Central Park 5 or whatever. I'm starting to become more conceding, sort of the idea of, you know, you look at these big cities like Baltimore or Chicago or really any major city east of the Rockies, and why not create some sort of reservation? And I say this seriously, you know, a place where they'd still be under American government, but other than that, I mean, you know, they still get government services, but for the most part, they leave them alone. They have their own police chief. They have their own forces. They have their own municipal elections, all that thing. And, you know, things like the whole Michael Brown thing, I think, would stop happening because they would deal with it themselves.
Well, I mean, certainly we've been trying to decentralize since 1861 down here, but, you know, and this gets to something we talked about last week, Pete, and you bring up a good point. there are modern-day secession movements all over the place from people wanting to break away, not just from the federal Leviathan, but from the state Leviathans in Colorado and in California. You see these things happening. I mean, it's so disconnected from middle American working-class people that, you know, we're just basically lemmings in the system. But, Winston, could you address Pete's idea or concern, rather, in the minute we have remaining? And thank you for the call.
Thank you.
James, Stephanie was having some trouble hearing hearing the caller, but from what she gathered, what I gathered, he was talking about reservations where different ethnicities could live. Is that what he's talking about?
Well, I guess the general scope would be you just create your own community that would cater to your. Well, to you know, right-thinking people, but still be somewhat subsidized by the government in terms of utilities and basic necessities. I don't know if they would go for that. They don't really like that. When you break away, they tend to to break back. But, well, anyway, I guess everybody heard it, and they can form their own conclusions. It was a good call, and unfortunately, we got to it a little late and didn't have a chance to really digest it and offer an intelligent response, and that's my fault. But we got to take a break, and we'll be back with the third and final hour tonight. God bless you. God bless you, Winston. Talk to you next week, brother. Radio Network.